And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's January 24th, 24th day of the year. 341 days remain till the year's over with. In the year 41, Claudius is proclaimed Roman Emperor by the Praetorian Guard after they assassinate the previous emperor. His nephew, Caligula, also known as Little Boots. 914 started the first Fatimid invasion of Egypt. 1438, the Council of Basel suspends Pope Eugene IV. Apparently, being God's spokesman on earth doesn't make you immune from everything. 1458, Matthias Corvinus is elected King of Hungary. 1536, King Henry VIII of England suffers an accident while jousting, leading to a brain injury that historians say may have influenced his later erratic behavior and possible impotence. 1651, I've often wondered the logic of running at somebody with a long pole in your hand. What are you accomplishing? 1651, Arauco War, Spanish and Mapuche authorities meet in the Parliament of Borora, renewing the fragile peace established at the Parliaments of Quillen in 1641 and 1647. 1679, King Charles II of England dissolves the Cavalier Parliament. 1742, Charles VII Albert becomes Holy Roman Emperor. 1758, during the Seven Years' War, the leading burghers of Königsberg submit to Elizabeth of Russia, thus forming Russian Prussia, which lasted till 1763. 1817, crossing of the Andes. Many soldiers of Juan Gregorio de las Heras are captured during an action at Pachuca. 1835, slaves in Salvador de Bahia, Brazil, stage a revolt, which is instrumental in ending slavery there 50 years later. 1848, California Gold Rush. On this date, James Marshall finds gold at Sutter's Mill in El Sacramento, which didn't do him any good, nor did it do Sutter any good. 1857, University of Calcutta is formally founded as the first fully-fledged university in South Asia. 1859, United Principalities of Moldavia and Wallachia, later changed its name to Romania, is formed as a personal union under the rule of Domnitor Alexandru Ioane Cuza. 1900, Second Boer War. The Boers stop a British attempt to break the siege of Ladysmith in the Battle of Spionkop. 1908, the first Boy Scout troop is organized in England under Robert Baden-Powell. 1915, World War I. British Grand Fleet battlecruisers under Vice Admiral Sir David Beatty engage Rear Admiral Franz von Hipper's battlecruisers in the Battle of Doga Bank. 1916, in Brushaber versus Union Pacific Railroad, the Supreme Court of the U.S. declares the federal income tax constitutional. Imagine that. 1918, the Gregorian calendar is introduced in Russia by decree of the Council of the People's Commissar, effective February 14th. 1933, the 20th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution is ratified, changing the beginning and end terms of all elected federal offices. 1939, the deadliest earthquake in Chilean history strikes Chileon, killing about 28,000 people. 1942, World War II, the Allies bombard Bangkok, leading Thailand, then under Japanese control, to declare war against the U.S. and the U.K. 1943, World War II. Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill conclude a conference in Casablanca. 1946. What if they went to Rick's Bar? United Nations General Assembly passes its first resolution to establish United Nations Atomic Energy Commission. 1960, Algerian War. Some units of European volunteers in Algiers stage an insurrection known as the Barricade is Weak, during which they seize government buildings and clash with local police. 1961, Goldsboro B-52 crash. Bomber carrying two H-bombs breaks up in midair over North Carolina. the uranium core of one of the weapons still remains lost to this day. Sitting on somebody's mantle someplace. 1966, Air India Flight 101 crashes into Mont Blanc. 1968, Vietnam War. The first Australian task force launches Operation Coburg against North Vietnamese Army and Viet Cong during wider fighting around Long Binh and Binh Hoa. 1972, Japanese Sergeant Soichi Yokoi is found hiding in a Guam jungle where he'd been hiding since the end of World War II. 1977, the Atocha massacre occurs in Madrid during the Spanish transition to democracy. 1978, Soviet satellite Cosmos 954 with a nuclear reactor on board burns up in the Earth's atmosphere. Scattered radioactive debris over Canada's Northwest Territory. About 1% of it's recovered. 1984, Apple Computer places the Macintosh personal computer on sale in the U.S. 1989, notorious serial killer Ted Bundy with over 30 known victims is executed by the electric chair at the Florida State Prison. 1990, Japan launches Hitten, the country's first lunar probe, the first robotic lunar probe since the Soviet Union's Lunar 24 in 1976, and the first lunar probe launched by a country other than the Soviet Union or the U.S. 2003, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security officially begins operations. 2009, Cyclone Klaus makes landfall near Bordeaux, France, caused 26 deaths as well as extensive disruption to public transport and power supplies. And in 2011, at least 35 are killed and 180 injured in a bombing at Moscow's Domodedovo Airport. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances, Christian Feast Day, Babylus of Antioch, Cadoc in Wales, Excipitantius of Sincoli, Felician of Foligno, Francis de Sales, Protestant Martyrs in the Greek Catholic Church, Day of the Unification of the Romanian Principalities, Romania, earliest day on which Saturday of Souls can fall, February 27th, or the 28th during a leap year is the latest, observed 57 days before Easter in the Eastern Orthodox Church. Feast of Our Lady of Peace in the Roman Catholic Church. Feria de Alacitas in La Paz. Uttar Pradesh Day in Uttar Pradesh, India. Let's see what else we might have on this particular day. Okay. 817, St. Pascal I begins his reign as Catholic Pope. He succeeded Stephen IV. 1076, the Synod of Worms. The German King Henry IV fires Pope Gregory VII. I didn't know the Holy Roman Emperor could fire the Pope. Apparently he could. 1118, Giovanni Cattani elected Pope Galatius II. 1121, English King Henry I marries his second wife, Adelija of Louvain at Windsor Castle. 1458, Matthias I Corvinus, chosen King of Hungary. 1534, Francois I signs a classified treaty with the evangelical German monarchy. 1568, in the Netherlands, the Duke of Alva declares William of Orange an outlaw. 1613, Amsterdam merchant Hans Bontemantel is baptized. 1616, Dutch mariner Jacob Lemaire discovers Lemaire Strait in the Tierra del Fuego. 1634, Emperor Ferdinand II declares Albrecht von Wallenstein a traitor. Wallenstein was a general and a nobleman. Ferdinand II was Holy Roman Emperor of a organization that was neither holy, nor Roman, nor an empire. 1639, Connecticut colony organizes under fundamental orders. 1644, the Parliamentary Army wins a battle at Nantwich in Cheshire in the English Civil War. 1648, Lord Baltimore's representative, Margaret Brent, ejected from the Maryland Council after she requested the right to vote. How dare she? 1652, the Duke of Orleans joins the Fronde rebels. 1656, the first Jewish doctor in North America colonies, Jacob Lombroso, arrives in Maryland. 1722, Tsar Peter the Great begins the civil system. 1722, Edward Wigglesworth appointed first North American divinity professor at Harvard. 1742, German leaders elect Charles VII Albert Emperor. 1764, Governor Winthrop's telescope is destroyed in a Harvard fire. 1776, Henry Knox arrives at Cambridge, Massachusetts with the artillery he's transported from Fort Ticonderoga. 1788, French La Pérouse expedition arrives in Botany Bay, Australia. They met the newly arrived First Fleet penal colony. 1789, Louis XVI of France issues an edict calling for the convocation of the Estates General. In the French Revolution, that was a major event. 1847, 1,500 the Mexican Indians and Mexicans defeated by U.S. Colonel Price. 1861, federal troops from Fort Monroe were sent to Fort Pickens. That's during the beginning of the Civil War, don't you know? 1862, Romanian principality arises under King Alexander Cuza. Bucharest is proclaimed its capital. 1874, General J. Van Sweeten conquers Creighton Ortiz after thousands die. 1878, revolutionary Vera Zasluch shoots at Fyodor Trepov, governor of St. Petersburg. Nothing says if she hit him or not. 1892, Battle of Mingo in Uganda. French missionaries attack British missionaries. Beat each other with Bibles. 1899, rubber heels for boots or shoes is patented by American Humphrey O'Sullivan. 1900, Battle of Tugela Spionkop in South Africa, the Boers versus the British Army. 1901, Denmark and the U.S. signed a treaty under which Denmark will sell the Danish West Indies to the U.S. for $5 million. However, the sale was postponed until 1917. 1916, the Military Service Bill, calling for conscription of men for war services, passes the British House of Commons. 1922, the Eskimo pie is patented by Christian K. Nelson of Iowa, who was not an Eskimo, by the way. 1923, the Aztec Ruins National Monument in New Mexico was established. 1924, Benito Mussolini disallows the non-fascist work union. 1924, the Russian city of St. Petersburg is renamed Leningrad. Changed back to St. Petersburg in 1991. 1925, a moving picture of a solar eclipse is taken from a dirigible flying over Long Island. 1935, The first canned beer called Kruger's Cream Ale is sold by the American brewing company, Kruger Brewing. In 1939, 30,000 people are killed by an earthquake in Concepcion in Chile. 1939, the Spanish government moves to Figueres. 1941, British troops march into Abyssinia. 1943, Adolf Hitler orders the German troops at Stalingrad to fight to the death. In 1943, Jewish patients, nurses, and doctors incinerated at Auschwitz-Birkenau. 1944, Allied troops occupy Nettuno in Italy. 1945, the Scottish 52nd Lowland Division occupies Hainsburg. 1952, there was a fire in the main building of the French Port Martin, and that was an Antarctic base. 1958, after warming to 100 million degrees, two light atoms are bashed together to create a heavier atom. That resulted in the first man-made nuclear fission. Or fusion, rather. 1960, Algeria rises up against French President de Gaulle. 1963, Buddy Rogers and Lou Thesz wrestle in Toronto. Rogers becomes the WWF wrestling champion. Thesz becomes NWA champion. 1964, Eric de Norman, a Dutch comic strip by Hans Kress, ends on this date in 1964. Also in 64, the 24th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution goes into effect. And states' voting rights couldn't be denied due to the failure to pay taxes. 1969, Queen Juliana of the Netherlands appointed an honorary citizen of Addis Ababa. 1969, Spanish dictator General Franco announces a state of emergency. 1969, students protest the erection of steel gates around the London School of Economics. 1976, former world heavyweight boxing champion George Foreman, who later developed a grill, knocks out Ron Lyle in the fifth round at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. Now, Foreman got knocked down twice in the fourth. It was called the Fight of the Year. 1977, Massacre of Atocha in Madrid. Five labor lawyers are murdered by fascists in Madrid during the Spanish transition to democracy. 1985, the 15th Space Shuttle mission. Discovery 3 is launched. 1986, Voyager 2 makes its first flyby of Uranus. Finds new moons. New moon. 1988, First, WWF Royal Rumble. Hacksaw Jim Duggan wins. I met him not too long ago. Nice guy. 1988, Cerebral Palsy Telethon raises $21 million. 1988, NBC premiered a fact-based The Murder of Mary Fagan. I did a show about that. In fact, I wrote about it. Let's see what else we've got. 1993, Turkish journalist and writer Uğur Mumcu is assassinated by a car bomb in Ankara. 2006, Walt Disney International and Bob Iger, who was the CEO of the Walt Disney Company, announced it's buying the computer animation film studio Pixar for $7.4 billion. In 2009, Pope Benedict XVI rescinds the excommunication of four bishops consecrated without papal consent in 1988 by Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre. In 2013, a Japanese Coast Guard ship engages a Taiwanese activist ship in the Senkaku Island dispute. In 2017, President Trump withdraws the U.S. from the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. In 2018, former U.S. Olympic team doctor Larry Nassar found guilty of molesting over 150 girls. He was sentenced to up to 175 years in prison. 2018, UK Charity President's Club forced to close after revelations of sexual harassment at an event revealed by the Financial Times. In 2019, a search for a missing Argentine footballer Emiliano Salas called off after rescuers failed to find the aircraft that disappeared from radar over the English Channel 3 days before. Search resumed, funded by the soccer community donations. The wreckage was found on February 3rd. We also have another interesting story. This was the 22nd was the anniversary of the Battle of Rorke's Drift that took place in South Africa, January 22nd, 1879. It's remembered as one of the world's most remarkable military engagements. The British were intent on expanding its territory and influence in South Africa in the 1870s and declared war on the Kingdom of Zululand. Rorke's Drift was a mission station near the border between the British colony of Natal and the Zulu Kingdom, and the British had occupied it. When the battle began, there were only 139 soldiers there. At 4:20 in the afternoon on January 22nd, 4,000 Zulu warriors began to lay siege to the station. Their attacks lasted almost 12 hours. Now, fortunately for the British, although some of the Zulus had old muskets and antiquated rifles, most were armed with a short spear called an assagi and a shield made out of cowhide. So, in weaponry, they were no match for the highly trained soldiers with what was then sophisticated rifle and firepower. But manpower advantage laid massively in favor of the Zulus. Now, as you might guess, the British won. We wouldn't be talking about it. Okay. We're going to go back to talking about mysterious disappearances, unsolved murders, all kinds of strange things. Now, you know, tens of thousands of people vanish every year. No explanation. Some are looking for a poor man's divorce. Others walk out the door and never get to where they're going. Let's talk about little 5-year-old Victor Shoemaker. He went out to play in the woods with his two older cousins. Only the two cousins came back. They were both required to take lie detector tests to determine if they had actually done something to their cousin, and they both passed the test. Now, nobody could understand what happened. Nobody could understand where the little boy went. The two older boys told investigators their 5-year-old cousin had been hungry and wanted to go back, and even though the two boys knew they should let him go back on his own, they didn't stop him when he walked away. That was the last time they saw him. They reported when they later returned to their grandparents' home in Hampshire County near Kirby. Now, it was May 1st, 1994, and the remote, rugged, forested mountainside soon became known as the forest that swallowed a little boy. Now, he had spent a lot of days out in the woods behind his grandparents' home. He loved the woods and knew the area well, and he had previously lived at home months before to announce his cousin's hunting prowess after killing a rabbit. In fact, his mother said he was so comfortable out in the wilderness, he preferred to run around and climb trees. Okay, I don't know what happened. For some reason, my system stopped transmitting. As I said, his mother said the little boy was so comfortable out in the wilderness, he preferred to run around and climb trees while barefoot, even in the cold seasons. Now, the FBI got involved, even though there was no evidence of abduction. Criminal record checks were run on several of the family members, but they all came up blank. According to his mother, nothing makes sense. Because after a long and detailed search, there was no sign the little boy found. She said, "We've been through the mountain with a tooth comb and not a footprint, a hair, nothing. And it's rained." Over 500 people voluntarily had gone into the mountains to help search for the little boy, along with heat-seeking helicopters that hovered over the more rugged parts of the mountain to see if he'd fallen into a crevice. Divers went into the various ponds. Local hunter Jay Pendell, who lived in one of the cabins on the mountain, was quoted in the local newspapers as saying, "There's something phony here. If he was in the woods, they'd have found him." Toward the end of the month, TV coverage prompted a National Guard search for the little boy. 4 months later, Special Forces Reserve units showed up to search for him, and they brought in a team of cadaver dogs. Still no sign of the little boy. Only questions, mystery, and the odd hint of a clue here and there. A canine bloodhound picked up a scent of him at the exit of the woodland that led to the road, but it wasn't reliable enough to go on. Hundreds of people covered that piece of ground in the search for him. Not a single solitary clue could be found. And then there was the strange formation found in the woods. 3 small rocks placed in the shape of a triangle with a piece of wood in the middle of it, and 3 links of wood on the sides of it. Well, eventually it was decided it was another dead end, and it was dismissed, but you have to remember his disappearance was May 1st. The night before this is known as Beltane in the pagan calendar, or well, Purgis Night in the Druidic calendar, but the day of his disappearance, May 1st, is said by some believers to be one of the Illuminati's most sacred days, and on this particular day, human sacrifice is said to be a requirement. It's also considered the founding day of the Illuminati, which was established May 1st, 1776, in Bavaria by Adam Weishaupt. Was the triangle formation a thaumaturgic triangle used in satanic summoning rituals? If it was, it had no protective circle around it, which, for those who believe it's possible to summon demons with this ritual, would be highly dangerous to the practitioners. Unless the wood placed around it was an attempt to create as close a circle as possible. The thaumaturgic triangle is used in the ritual demon summoning, with the triangle said to be the domain in which the summoned entity or negative energy will manifest itself. Satanists are said to mark out a triangle area with symbols or charged items, so it could be rocks or stones, and these symbols placed at the 3 points of the triangle. Now, this may be, and possibly is, wholly unrelated to the disappearance of the child. But when looking further into the relevance of this day in supposed occult and Illuminati calendars, proponents of the ritual importance of these days have pointed out that it's one of the days of human sacrifice, with a particular emphasis on the need for that sacrifice to be a child. Indeed, the theory of special days goes a lot further, outlining the importance of the time period between April 19th to May 1st, said to be the critical 13-day period where 13 is a number of regeneration and sacrifices made to the beast of the master. A time of, blood sacrifice from ancient times, said to be in the worship of the demon Baal. Now, there were wild but horrifying claims have been made of children being bred for the purpose of sacrifice, or being abducted to be sacrificed by the secret society. Claims which reach the highest level of political and religious groups. Now, figures vary. It's said between 50 and 80,000 young children disappear every year in the U.S. So could it really be true that children and adults are abducted for sacrificial satanic cults? Do they become victims of the powerful underground elite operating from the highest levels of government down? Is this in any way plausible, or is it just crazy and unfounded speculation? James Rothstein, a retired NYPD detective, wrote extensively about his investigations into human trafficking and child abduction, and his investigation pointed to elite pedophile rings, shadowy groups concealed, cloaked, and hidden, and held together by secret blood oaths. In just one very complex case, 12-year-old Johnny Gosch was abducted while on his newspaper delivery round in Des Moines, Iowa, in September 1982. His mother claimed an abduction ring, which was part of the earlier established MKUltra program, was behind it. She even gave testimony in court of what she believed to be a nationwide satanic ring. Now, those who believe there's truth in the existence of satanic and occult ritual worship also point to some very important events in recent history as having occurred during this 13-day period, including April 19th in Waco, April 19th, the Oklahoma City bombing, April 20th, the Virginia Tech massacre. Then there's the high school student in Germany who killed 18 on April 27, 2002 and then killed himself at exactly 1,300 hours, with 13 allegedly flagging the Illuminati power number and the conspiracists claiming that committing suicide to complete a mass killing is a hallmark of a mind-control victim. Bill Cooper wrote about this in his book, Behold a Pale Horse. I recommend that book. It's fascinating. And then go read some of mine. Counter to this argument, of course, is that there are many other dates on the calendar outside this 13-day period where mass murders and abductions have taken place. So let's go back to the disappearance of 5-year-old Victor. One local newspaper reported a psychic by the name of Louis Gonneau contacted the sheriff to say he kept having visions of the boy being taken to a shack in the woods, and he described the natural features around the shack. Well, for his part, the sheriff recognized that part of the woods, despite the fact the psychic was a resident in another state hundreds of miles away and had never been to the woods. Sheriff, though, was also inclined to believe the psychic due to the fact he'd also once contacted a nearby sheriff 2 years before and precisely described where a man's body could be found in Marshall County. He was absolutely spot on, and the man's body was found. The psychic described that in his vision of the little boy, a man with a beard and long hair was involved, and he'd been stalking the boy in the woods. His words were very clear. There's only one vision I see every time. Little boy's in a hole in the ground, and there's still energy there. In other words, he was saying the little boy wasn't dead, but was being held. The police kept missing something, the psychic said. Well, the sheriff went to the place described, and the shack was there. Little boy was not. Given that Gonneau had said he'd been in a shack and then in the ground, it would seem maybe to imply he'd been moved and taken somewhere else, where he was held captive in the ground. Given his accuracy in finding the other man, maybe his vision in this case was unfortunately correct. Could serial abductors, experts in concealment and evasion, fit and elusive with a strong motive, exist and flourish in wilderness areas in this country? Well, I got another story that may be a good illustration. In the 1930s, the bone-freezing winters and untamed wilds of the Northwest Territory of Canada were one of the most inhospitable places on the planet. No heating, no modern comforts, and exposure in this terrain was anything other than a short time would have been clearly suicidal. Now, none of this deterred Albert Johnson, a man of infamy who led the Mounties on a ferocious hunt after shooting several of them. Moving along to the territories, he took up residence in a log cabin and set traps to survive off the land. Hunting for both food and fur, he got a lonely but presumably chosen existence. The only people for miles around him were the local Inuits. But he was interfering with their traps, on which their livelihood depended, and they asked the police to come talk to him. Well, the closest Mounties, almost 100 miles away, arrived in the minus 50-degree cold. And Johnson refused to open the cabin door. When they kicked it down, he shot one of them. And he drilled holes in his cabin. And from inside, he shot at him. Outgunned by the trapper's firepower, not expecting to be as heavily armed, only offensive, they withdrew, but came back later with a larger posse of 10 men, a pack of dogs, explosives, and a whole lot of rifles. Well, when they arrived back, the trapper held him in a gunfight for more than 12 hours till the Mounties threw a stick of dynamite into the cabin in an attempt to smoke him out. Well, as they came storming into the cabin to arrest him, he surprised them by firing up at him from a foxhole they had dug in the floor of the cabin. But what happened next was both astonishing and unbelievable, but it really did happen. In what seemed utterly impossible, this man led the police on a 7-week manhunt across a snow-covered wilderness, which saw him climb a 7,000-foot peak with no climbing gear, only to disappear once more. And he was sly beyond belief. At one stage, he crossed a frozen river using the tracks of a caribou in order to conceal his own footprints. Well, by the end of the chase, having been pursued for more than 50 days by police, army, Indian trackers, dogs, and airplanes, he was finally cornered and shot. But only after he'd covered nearly 90 miles in 72 hours. He never said a word in any of his encounters with the police, almost like a ghost in his ability to elude and evade until the final confrontation when he eventually ran out of escape routes. So how did he survive and escape for weeks amid blizzards and whiteouts with no provisions except ammunition, climb mountains, cover ground faster than the dogs could? Somehow he managed to do that. So could the psychic who said he'd had visions of a man stalking and snatching little Victor in the woods have been right? Story shows just how possible it is for a man with extraordinary guile, strength, and intention to exist as a shadowy, elusive figure in the unforgiving wilderness, living off the land and outsmarting fellow humans by the score. Could a man stalk, snatch, abduct, escape, and elude at will? Well, it would seem that that is certainly possible. Well, in one final reference to occult connections mentioned in the Shoemaker case, a lot of researchers, including a endtimeelect.com blog run by a supposed fourth-generation escapee of the Illuminati, speculate that in a well-known case of the missing baby girl, Lisa Irwin, who was abducted from her Kansas home in 2011 for the purpose of sacrifice, her first birthday fell on 11-11-11. This particular person that did this blog goes on to even further in making the astonishing claim the child was smuggled out of the country and put into a boat organized by a trust run by the Luciferian Knights of Malta, claiming that the trust itself traces underwater ley lines for the Illuminati Satanist, another reference to the ley line connection. So could any of this be true? Same person also claims that DARPA technology enabled a door to the house to be opened to allow the abductor in. Well, you might say this is all crazy and preposterous, and it might possibly be, but the connection to Malta is an interesting one, for it leads to the apparent belief that in Malta, underground beings demand human sacrifices, at least according to research and archaeologist Graham Stewart. Now, going back to Malta for a moment, it's been an island of great strategic importance, stronghold for the British Navy during World War II. According to the Stuart Graham, mythological creatures do exist and governments have long known about them. They're fed humans. When ancient priests that worshipped Baal came to the island, they practiced the offering of humans to their god of the underworld, who they believed lived under the island. What is, in fact, true is that in 1902, laborers digging a well accidentally discovered a series of excavations which descended down into multi-level catacombs. And I mentioned in an earlier show the hypogeum of Hal Sapienti, as it became known. It had long subterranean passages that had traveled underground for many, many miles. When it was first discovered, it was said that human skeletons numbering at least 7,000 were found inside. Well, been many, many stories about people going into underground areas and encountering people who live there. Now, we've got another story from the editor of Borderland Science. He put together testimonies from others, both in regular positions in life and those involved in esoteric and auric study, to become convinced in a theory that there exists many races in the interior of the planet of different densities and dependent on their plane of vibration. And some of these underground races, it said, can shift between third and fourth dimensions so that sometimes they're visible and sometimes they're not. Now, it's said that if you want to study occultism, the first step is to study the invisible worlds. Got a story that I came across by a young lady whose first name is Susie. She heard discussions of these matters on Coast to Coast, which is a fascinating radio show. She said her sister moved to a different town since all this happened, and she hadn't been back because it all happened in New Hampshire. She said the creatures that she's talking about are totally invisible, and who knows where they are or where they went. Anything that was that intelligent in the treetops needs to be investigated, in her opinion. She's talking about invisible entities, don't you know? She was staying at her sister's home in a wooded subdivision in Hampstead. It was spring 2003. Been raining for days. Often late at night, Susie'd go out on the front deck to smoke, and she described that each night as she sat on the deck after midnight, she'd hear large sticks breaking in the forest. She heard it every night. Being a seasoned camper and having been brought up by scout leaders, she didn't think anything about it at first, but she did notice she had never heard any rustling leaves, but she brushed it off as being some kind of animals. But night after night, the sounds continued. She could hear the sound of scraping on a tree bark and things dropping out of trees. She'd look into the forest for any kind of movement, but she couldn't see anything. The porch and driveway of the home were well lit by floodlights, and she used a flashlight to beam light into the trees, but she couldn't see anything. And then the sounds started to get closer. The longer she stayed on the porch, the closer the sounds started to come. In daylight, she checked the trees for any marks and looked for animal tracks. Sent her nephew out into the woods to jump on sticks to measure the sounds she was hearing. Now, you could only break smaller sticks, but Susie could break the large ones by jumping on them. This implied that whatever was doing it was larger than an 11-year-old boy. And she didn't know of any animals at large whose habitat was in that area. Not only that, but at night they were getting closer to the house. Getting her nephew to move around in the woods, she was able to estimate the distance the sounds were coming from had to be no more than 20 or so feet away from where she sat. And she knew that there were more than just one of them because at night the sounds would come from the front of the house and as well as from behind at the same time. They were coming from two different directions simultaneously. But they weren't visible to human sight. They weren't showing up on any photographs she'd taken. But even inside the house, she began to feel she's being watched. On the laptop at night, sitting by the curtainless window, she felt like she's being observed. The dogs were picking up on something well because from their basement crates, they'd start howling. Then one night, she was outside on the porch once again when she heard them coming. Again, the floodlights were lit up and she could see the panorama of trees very clearly, but she couldn't see anything. There was no rustling, just sticks breaking. About 8 feet from where she sat, some plants stood in pots on the lower part of the deck. And she watched as the plants moved to one side and then sprang back into place as though something had brushed past them. Except she couldn't see anything. The night had no wind or breeze, but the flowers had been pushed aside a significant distance. Whatever it was, it had come up the stairs toward her. Well, in absolute shock, her head running through what she'd just seen, she turned and ran inside and locked the door. Well, shortly after that, she was sitting by the window, working on her computer once again when the eerie feeling of being watched came back. As she looked at the living room wall, she thought she could see shadows above it on the ceiling, as though something had just walked past, but everybody was in bed but her. She thought it had to be her imagination playing tricks and decided to take a shower and relax. Bathroom was situated across from the basement, which was closed. Finished her shower and came out of the bathroom, and the basement door was open. She went upstairs. She saw her nephew's bedroom light was on, but he was asleep in the bed. She thought it possible whatever was outside had gotten into the house. How'd they get in? She couldn't figure it out. Maybe through the walls or through the basement door. And she wanted to know what they were, and why were they so interested in humans? She said, I'm a person who's been through a lot and has seen and experienced a lot. I don't scare as easily as others, which is why I stood there so long and why I went back night after night to listen and see if I could see them. No movement whatsoever visually, and it was reasonably lit. And no one in her sister's house was up late and outside, so they had never experienced this before, and they tried to make all kinds of excuses for it, like it was the trees popping from the cold weather or small animals. She's only 4 or 5 feet from the door the whole time, and she wished she'd been able to get her brother-in-law to stand out there with her. He's a total non-believer in anything unexplained. She described him as too science-based. He believed all things were explainable. And she tried to flip her cigarette in their direction, but it didn't fly right, and she lost an opportunity and went back in. Wanted to see if it would bounce off whatever it was. She wondered, were they just watching? Were they testing, hunting, getting ready to abduct? On the grass, there were no sticks. They're silent. How many other homes did they get into? There are no other sounds, no communication of any time, not even telepathically. These things are either interdimensional entities, she thought, or cloaked, maybe just out of our visual range of ability to see. We need to learn about them as fast as we can so we're not caught with our pants down. She had no other way to get her story out when it happened. Calling into shows is hit or miss, and paranormal forums only reach a small portion of society. She knows they're there, but she doesn't know what to do about it. Well, a lot of people accused her initially of making up the story. They didn't believe it was real. And they made every forest animal the source of the sounds, as if she didn't know about regular animal sounds. Of course, a few said it might be Bigfoot, because they believe he can become invisible. But she's fairly certain it wasn't Bigfoot. Bigfoot breaks trees and beats on things. He walks heavy and rustles the foliage and dry leaves on the forest floor. This was a quiet creeping. There was no rustling at all. Well, an interesting account on Godlike Productions forum is very similar to the account that was sent by Susie. This person's account's in response to a fellow reader who had an experience with something invisible. This took place in Colorado. It was a number of years ago, only this one settled into a cottonwood tree next to her house. There was nothing there to be seen, but it was very active. All day it broke branches, snapped them from the tree, and threw them and dropped them down. Friend came over, and she told him, and they sat outside looking. There were no animal sounds, deathly silence, not even insects were making a noise, no wind. Every couple of minutes a branch would snap, and they formed a pile on the ground. Well, feeling a little more secure with her friend present, she walked the 60 feet to the tree, but stayed about 30 feet from it. Couldn't see anything, then a branch about 15 feet long got thrown in her direction. Well, she backed off quickly. A year later, she learned by chance about a man and his wife walking by the creek and became aware of something moving through the treetops, breaking off branches as it went. They said this saw a shimmering like the predator on the Arnold Schwarzenegger film. Another weird thing, they've had people occasionally go missing there in the mountains. One man went missing a few years ago. They found his skeleton still wearing his backpack. Skeleton was intact, but the skull was gone. It's interesting to note, he claims in his case it stopped after he said a prayer. Very similar to the plethora of accounts of people say they've had encounters with demonic and reptilian entities. And they found it by praying aloud, it's forced them to leave. Now, it's not successful in every case, but in the majority of cases, it does seem to work. This might give a clue as to the origins of these creatures. Now, the individual related the account to another person who also had a story. I was asking for suggestions to help him understand what it was he'd seen without walking his dog one day. He said, first off, he didn't do drugs, didn't drink. As far as you know, he's sane. Doesn't believe in aliens, has a college degree. Well, the day before he was walking his dog, and he's in the country, in the woods or along that road, and just off the path, he saw something that disturbed him. And the only way he could describe it was predator-like. Now, apparently the dog didn't notice it. They were shaded under the cover of trees with no broken streaks of light. It was a clear sky, so it wasn't the sun and it wasn't the shadows of leaves. He investigated all the possibilities. Whatever he saw was off the ground by about a foot, and it was shadow-like, as though it was holographic in nature. It was running into the woods, and at first he thought it was some sort of enormous snake, but he realized it didn't have a solid form. Really looked like a scene out of the film Predator, though he hadn't seen it for a few years, before you can see feet moving like a hologram, though superimposed over the plants and leaves. Strangest thing he'd ever seen. He saw the plants moving where it went. No sound of was made by the creature. But he noticed after it ran, the sounds began to come back. Then a lady maintaining anonymity forwarded an account of her experience to the Phantom Universe UK blogspot. She said it happened early in the morning, about 7 in the morning in April 2010. She and her husband were traveling from Breckenridge in Summit County, Colorado to Abilene. Her husband was driving, and she was looking around when on the road ahead of them, her eyes saw something. They were coming up a small incline in the road, and it was visibly very clear. When she saw something run across the road on the top of the rise in front of them from left to right. There was something visible there above the road by a few inches. Looked like small feet and part of legs moving fast over the road in a trot. Now, she couldn't see above mid-level except for a rippled sky behind a thing about the size of a person's body. Once again, it reminded her of the predator effect in the movies. Well, as they passed the spot, she didn't see anything. Looked on both sides, down in the ditches, no animal, no nothing. Nothing into the trees either, although she got the feeling of something was watching them. She told her husband after she saw it cross the road, but he didn't seem to see it. For the rest of the trip, she kept looking to see if it was her eyes playing tricks. Only thing she can say is that as it crossed the road, she felt a definite presence. Well, we got another Bigfoot field reporter blog. And while not necessarily believing in the possibility of invisible creatures, the woman that runs it got a report from a woman who described a puzzling incident at the Salt Fork State Park in May of 2008. Something crossed a trail in front of her. It was big, but what she couldn't see was the shape of it, just a glimmer, as a saw a transparent outline. It seemed to be upright. It was about 20 yards away from her. For years, she felt too uneasy to tell anybody about it. She didn't have the words to describe it, but was it a Bigfoot in a non-physical sense? No other way to describe it. It was puzzling. Then she was listening to a radio talk show, and a caller who was a Marine related the exact same thing happened to him, and he compared it to the Predator film, where the alien-type creature is seen first only as a shimmering outline. Well, that's exactly what she saw, and she's still terrified by it to this day. She even thinks that whatever it was could still be following her somehow. Recently, she found a collection of twigs and leaves on her deck chair within the space of a couple of hours, and that isn't the first time it happened. The woman that runs the blog had a different but still very strange experience when out for a jog with her husband one summer at Hogback Ridge in Boulder, Colorado. They'd already looped the trail once, and he'd left her behind, being a faster runner, and she needed to use the restroom near the parking area. When she left the restroom, she caught sight of her husband out of the corner of her eye go past the side of their parked car and duck down behind it about 80 feet away. She thought he's planning on playing a trick on her, was going to jump out and scare her, so she jogged toward the car to tell him it was too late she'd seen him, but when she got to the car, there was nobody there. Looked all around the car and in the trees behind it and didn't find anybody. It was at this point her husband arrived from the other side of the parking lot running out of the woods, so she had to assume that it was just her seeing things, but was it? Then MUFON has another report. The reporter was hunting in Wilson, North Carolina in November 2009, about 6 in the morning, when a burst of wind hit him. But it was very strange. This one was blowing in a circular fashion, making a humming sound, a bit like a high-powered electric motor. He said he thought it would have thought it was a natural thing it hadn't been for the humming. It had to be blowing 40 miles per hour, but in a circular pattern. And he knew this because he could see the tops of the trees bending in a circular pattern. The noise stayed over his head for about 2 minutes before it moved on. His feeling at the time was one of terror. Now, he had a rifle, but he was still terrified. Something flew over his head he couldn't see. Of that, he was absolutely positive. And then there's an account from the Muskegon Chronicle of May 21st, 1998, in the Manistee National Forest, when school children and their accompanying teachers are witness to a large silent object described like a protozoa, an amoeba that appeared to float slowly over the tree line above them. The body of the thing was described as being like a shimmering gossamer and almost transparent or insubstantial, but it also seemed to be illuminated by lights. With the exception of lights, its last accounts reminiscent of Navy veteran Trevor Constable's 20-year study of atmospheric beings, his theory of skybound entities that roam the skies in silence. He said they're visible only by the use of infrared, but they're always there. Organic creatures of some sort, large, voracious, but invisible to the naked eye. These undetectable predators could take people without people seeing them coming. His theory was that these morphic beasts he captured with the use of infrared cameras were monsters that only increased their density and became more visible when searching for food, their food source being humans. Shimmering predators that shift in density as they swoop down to attack. And he blamed the accounts of livestock mutilations and disappearances and human mutilation cases and the constant stream of people going missing every year on these soaring predatory entities. 1950s, he captured images on film in Yucca Valley in the Mojave Desert, shattered dense beings that appeared to look like living cells. Others stick on the form of UFOs. All are framed by the landscape and remembering their size to be scaled in comparison to natural features. And there's no question about it, they were huge. For years, reports had surfaced of strange creatures inhabiting the skies above us. He now believed he'd captured images of them in infrared. In a journal of Borderland Research, he wrote objects to be in the film, but as a stirring that followed the lines of their structure. This was the puzzle until they came in contact with George DeWire's work, a radionics pioneer who discovered everything living as a etheric axis. Etheric energy transfer would be captured on the film just like photographs that captured the auric energy field of humans. Cosmo believed he had captured the churning turbulence of auric energy as the objects changed form and shape. Path film technicians who handle millions of feet of movie film footage said he'd never seen anything like it before. He concluded, "We now know that creatures and crafts exist in a range of forms beyond human sight, that this life is invisible to human sight. Some forms not fully materialized indicate they're perhaps emerged from an even more remote range fifth state of density." Then more recently in the Oxford countryside of England between 2010 and 2011, Nick Hayes decided to adopt a different approach. For the filming where he captured them, he used an infrared full-spectrum converter to 330 Canon digital camera with a nanometer ultraviolet pass filter to film ultraviolet set in movie mode. He's taken out the hot mirror and used a piece of clear quartz in its place, which opens up a whole spectrum of infrared, ultraviolet, and invisible. Then use various filters to filter out the infrared, normal light, and leave just the invisible. Shown with the footage slowed down to a speed of about 1/8 due to the extreme speed at which these things are flying, they were filmed in daylight hours, and swarms of these entities can be seen above the tree lines, and several of them swoop down below the tree line heading toward the ground. They can be seen on YouTube Quest for the invisible QFTI. Well, on that note, we've run out of time. We'll be back tomorrow and talk more about folks that are disappear unexplainably and are never seen again. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.